Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is Eat, Sleep, Work, Repeat, a weekly podcast on happiness and work culture. Hi, this is Eat, Sleep, Work, Repeat. This is Bruce Daisley. It's a podcast about improving work and being happier in our jobs. Now, while my time at the top of the Apple Podcasts chart is now in the past, there have been small victories this week. I'm number 67 in the business charts in Malta, 76 in Romania. So today's episode is dedicated to the people in Valletta and Bucharest. I won't let you down. If you listened last week, you'll know that the audio from the Culture 2.0 event was all resting in the hands of Alan on the sound desk. There was a hashtag, pray for Alan. Alan received the memory stick from me, but couldn't save anything from it, which beggars belief, doesn't it? I'm already over it. I don't blame Alan, even though it is totally and utterly his fault. Don't worry, not only did we have Dan Cable last week on the show sharing some of his wisdom, but next week we've got one of the other best presenters from the event, Ben Weber, who's the CEO of Humanize. Now today's episode, halfway through the first series of these, someone contacted me and asked about remote working. And that's remote working rather than flexible working. So this is people working from somewhere else all the time, not doing a day waiting for the washing machine man. There's a wonderful guy, Jake, who works at Twitter with me. And he told me that everyone at his last job worked remotely and it was really, really lonely. So I was interested in understanding a bit more about remote working. And there were two people that I wanted to talk to. I chatted to Jason Fried, who's the CEO of Basecamp, and that's like a web software company. And he's also the author of two very readable business books, Rework and Remote. Basecamp are based in Chicago, but anyone who works there can work remotely. Secondly, I also spoke to Deborah Ripple. Deborah is People Success Manager at Buffer. I'll introduce Deborah properly in a moment, but let's start with Jason. I actually read Jason's book Rework about 5 years ago. It's like a series of 50 angry, polemic articles challenging the way we work today. And I was interested in asking about Basecamp, about how they'd reached the stage, because they're a fascinating organisation. They have an office, but anyone can work anywhere. I kicked off chatting to Jason. He explained to me that one of the problems with most offices is people just can't get anything done.
Most work environments don't allow people to actually do that. And so what they end up having to do is they end up having to work late nights or really early mornings or on the weekends, because that's the only time they have uninterrupted stretches of time to get work done. Their work days, which is what they're being paid for, have been shattered into, you know, dozens of moments. There's no more work day. There's work moments. You've got like 15 minutes here and 30 minutes there and 45 minutes there, and maybe an hour if you're lucky here and there. But that's it. And so it's frustrating because I see people working longer hours and it takes a toll on their life and their family and all these sorts of things. And I don't think it's because there's more work to actually do. I think the amount of work stays pretty constant. I think what happens though is that people don't have the time to do the work anymore. And that frustrates me that people have to then chip away at life to make up for the stuff that work screws you over on.
Right, because you talk about a few things. You talk work, you say that 40 hours is plenty enough to get a job done. Consequently, that sense that we need to work longer and into weekends. And you think that's just because work's configured wrong. Is that right?
I do. I mean, I think, and lately, you know, I've been talking about 40-hour weeks, but I really want to actually bring it back to just 8-hour days, because that's a more, like, it's a simpler concept. 8 hours is a lot of time. It's the amount of time it takes to fly from Chicago to Paris. That's a long time. And if you've ever been on a flight like that, you can be on it for like 4 hours and you think you're kind of getting close. You look at your watch, you're like, holy shit, I've got 4 hours left, which means I can watch two movies or I can maybe read, you know, 200 pages in a book or whatever it is. Like, it's a lot of time. 8 hours is a huge amount of time. And even when people fly, they end up getting a lot of stuff done like in a 2 or 3 hour flight that what they normally wouldn't be able to get done in a whole work day at work because of the interruption. So I just think 8 hours is enough time if you actually have 8 hours to yourself. And that's what I believe companies and managers and owners should care about, is making sure that their employees have a full 8 hours to themselves to actually get their work done. Because if they do, they can get a ton of stuff done. And then you add up, you know, 5 days at 8 hours, you're at 40 hours, and that's enough. You can go home and be rested and come back Monday and do it again. So I just think there's plenty of time. There's ample time. There's enough time if you squeeze out all the stuff that doesn't matter.
So you're talking about something you've introduced, No Talk Thursdays. And it sort of struck me that a combination of what you're talking about there, the idea of deep work and No Talk Thursdays. I wondered to some extent, if you're describing the perfect working world of introverts, would this work for everyone, or is this construction deliberately designed for those who revel in time on their own?
Well, I think it has to do with the type of work, you know, the nature of the work at some level. Obviously, if you're, you know, working in an environment, like let's say you're in sales or something, and you're constantly on the phone, and you know, and you're not really involved in a job that requires for any individual piece of work an extended period of time. Like, you might make 10 or 15 sales calls in a day, or 5 or 6, whatever it is, but you're kind of bouncing around between opportunities. That's maybe a different job. But I don't think introversion or extroversion has a lot to do with the fundamental need to have uninterrupted stretches of time in order to do creative work. I just think you need that. I don't think great work is coming from people who have to bounce around, you know, in an hour and do 4 different things. Context switching is very costly. It's very difficult to do. And it just keeps shaving away at the margins. So, you know, you feel like you can do 4 things in an hour, 15 minutes each. You don't really have 15 minutes each to do 4 things in an hour. You have, you know, maybe 10 minutes each, because there's buffers at the edges and you've got to get back into the zone and all. It's just, and by the way, that's not even enough time anyway. So I'm not sure if it's introversion or extroversion. I think the No Talk Thursdays thing, like, hey, even if you're an extrovert, one day a week or even one day a month where everyone's just quiet, like, just give it a shot. And you might be surprised that your extroversion or your extroverted tendencies might really appreciate just the ability to get down and get to work. And there's plenty of other time to talk to people. So I don't know. I don't think it's one or the other. I do think in some ways, if you really had to put it on a scale, I do think it's slightly more advantageous for introverts. But I don't think that the fundamental basics are that different.
So let's go into talking about remote work. And I think when I was reading Remote, your opinion piece on that, what I was struck by is the thing you talk about is the waste of time by commute, the hours that we spend in these really unproductive times commuting. Why do you think so few companies have taken the step to challenge that? This seems like one easy economy that any company could make. And I'm just surprised so few companies are doing it.
It's funny, isn't it? How, you know, you have a lot of innovative companies and companies that are always talking about disruption and this whole thing, yet they're like terrified to shatter the, you know, the basics of you know, how they work. And it is odd to me. I mean, here's the thing, though. It is hard to change to a remote working environment. I think that the companies that have a best shot at it are ones that are starting up from that point of view, versus ones that have, you know, 200 employees who've all worked locally forever, and all of a sudden they're going to hire their first remote employee. Like, that doesn't work. But I think you can ease into it by allowing people who normally come to the office to work from home one day a week or one day a month or something, and begin to slowly ease into it and just see that, hey, the world's not going to come to an end. You know, the company's not going to go out of business if people work from home one day a week or one day a month or whatever it might be, and just start to become comfortable with that notion. Part of the problem, though, too, is that traditional managers, you know, a lot of them manage by walking around and feel like they need to see people in order to get the sense that they're actually working. But sitting or seeing somebody at a desk typing away or walking by their screen doesn't mean that they're working. All they're doing is sitting at a desk typing away at a screen. Like, working, the output of work is what you can judge. And I think if someone's capable of doing that remotely, then they should be allowed to do it remotely. If they're incapable of it, that's a different story. But if they're capable of it, allowing them to work remotely, I think makes a lot of sense. To me, it's fundamentally about respect as well. So, for example, I don't think as a business owner that I'm entitled to tell somebody basically where they can live their life, which is what most jobs are. They sort of require you to be in a physical location. So if I want to go work for XYZ company, I have to go move to Boston to do it, for example, because they're based in Boston. You know, granted, you could say, well, just get another job, but it's not that easy sometimes. So you go work somewhere, and then let's say your husband or your wife or your partner or whatever, they need to move because wherever they need to go somewhere else for family reasons or even work or whatever. And you don't all of a sudden, like if you move with them, if you move with your family, if you move with your life, you may lose your job. That strikes me as really unfair. And so I feel like if anyone works for us and they want to go somewhere else, that's great. We can keep them. They can keep their job and everyone's happy versus saying, hey, you're out of here because something else in your life has changed. I just don't see why businesses feel like they have the right to dictate that.
So much of this seems to be sort of, especially when a company is feeling weak or vulnerable, then control and just grasping onto the old-fashioned legacies of control seems to be the critical thing. Because you mentioned, and it was in the news, a couple of years ago, Yahoo cancelled all of their remote working practices. You often hear that, don't you? In businesses that are trying to assert control over what's happening, remote working seems to be the first thing that goes.
Yeah, you know, that's a great example. So Yahoo is a good example. And of course, look, the problem with Yahoo is not the remote workers. Let's just face that. Like the problem with Yahoo is Yahoo doesn't know who Yahoo is. They don't know what they're doing. Their company is all over the place. They've had a series of management changes and CEO change. Like the company is rudderless. It's not that 3% or whatever it was of their workforce work remotely. That wasn't the problem. Twitter did another thing. When Twitter laid off a bunch of people, they primarily laid off significant numbers of the percentage of the people they laid off, I believe, were remote workers. It's a great, and IBM recently did something too. They're struggling as well to change into a different, you know, area, subject matter, basically, into services, more and more into services. And I think they're struggling a bit. And so they basically called everybody in as well. So I think it's typically not companies you see that are doing really well that are causing everyone to come back in. It's companies, like you said, that something's wrong. And so they grasp and they feel like, well, the first step is to get everyone in the same room together. And, you know, maybe that works for some. It's fair to say that for some it might work. I just don't see evidence of that actually panning out. Perhaps people will prove us wrong, and if they do, that's great. Because I'm open to other points of view on this. It's just that you're right. The patterns don't really necessarily suggest that these are moves made because the company's doing well and that they'd be doing better. It's because something else is wrong and they're looking for it. I know a lot of companies also, rather than having layoffs and announcing layoffs, they'll basically do this thing where they'll say, hey, you have to come work in the office, so we're not going to allow remote working, which allows people to basically quit or leave. And it's a different way of saying we're laying people off. Instead of it's like, well, we're not laying anybody off, but you have this choice, you either come or you go. And if you go, well, then you go. And they knew they'd lose, you know, 15% of their workforce that way, and they'd be happy to do it. It's a lot softer to do that than lay people off. So there's a lot of other strategies at play here, unfortunately.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because there's so much conservatism. The status quo just wins so often, because when we come to the process of reinventing work, to change anything, you need to prove that not only are you equal to the current status quo in work, but you have to be better. The burden of proof is always on the reinventing party.
And that's fair, by the way. I mean, I do think it's fair that, like, if you're going to say, hey, we used to do things this way, and now, hey, I want everyone to do things this way, or let's say X way and Y way, Y is the new way, like, you know, that is a leap of faith, and I get it. Like, and you know, everyone has new ideas all the time, so we shouldn't be probably shifting the way we work constantly. But I think outright dismissal out of hand of new ideas in that regard. And also, there's plenty of evidence and great companies that work remotely, and do a variety of other things. So I think there's plenty of evidence out there to say, like, this, some of these ideas are worth a shot. But here's the other thing: at the end of the day, it doesn't matter to me if other companies change. Like, what matters to me is, like, how we run our business, because that's all I have control over. And hopefully what we're able to do is, by sharing these ideas, is we're able to get other business owners who are curious about running a better business or starting up a brand new business to give our way, or, you know, it's not just our way, but it's a way we represent, a shot. But I would not expect, you know, big corporations to embrace what I'm talking about, nor should they. They're going to do their own thing. So I'm not really out to save anybody or rescue anybody. In that sense, I'm out to share a point of view that hopefully other people who are getting started, who are small enough and eager and interested and willing to change, can give it a shot.
It seems like there's one concept to understand. It's this idea of asynchronous working, people not necessarily having to do the same job in the same place at the same time. And you talk about the first step to that is becoming ASAP free.
Yeah.
Do you want to explain that?
Yeah, I think there's too much real-time communication happening in companies these days, and it's getting worse and worse, and it's causing people to be more and more distracted and feel like they're missing out on conversations that are happening right now, and if they don't jump in right now, they won't be heard. And there's just sort of this conveyor, constant conveyor belt of conversation, and if you're not in it while it passes your station, then you miss out. It's like we're factory workers again, but with information this time. So our point of view is that real-time communication is handy occasionally when you really absolutely truly need it. But in most cases, you're better off communicating asynchronously. So for us in Basecamp, that means posting messages or writing up comments on threads that are attached to something that stick around and don't move away from you when other conversations start. So and that's just Basecamp, but email is another form of asynchronous communication. There's a variety of other ways to communicate synchronously, but the principle is that I'll write something down and you'll read it on your own time, and you'll get back to me when you're ready to. Versus real-time communication is this assumption that there's going to be, if I say something, you're going to get back to me immediately. And there's a very distinctly different feel when a company is all real-time, where everyone's just talking constantly and expecting immediate responses, versus an asynchronous company where people write stuff up and other people will respond on their own time. Asynchronous-based communication is a much calmer method. It also allows everyone to own and control their own schedule and their own time versus always being pulled away from what you're doing by someone else who wants an immediate response. The other thing that's nice about asynchronous is a lot of people think that remote companies need to be real time. They need to have all these real time tools all the time. But actually, real time is quite bad for remote companies that are spread across time zones. Because what it does is real-time communication across time zones extends everybody's workday, because they feel like they have to be on. Hey, if someone's 2 or 3 hours ahead and the only way we can talk is in real time, then I have to sort of stay a little bit longer so there's a little bit more overlap for us to have that one conversation that I need to have and that they need to have before I go off and they sign on, the whole thing. So the thing is, with async, you just write something up and the next day you get a response and that's fine. And there's no feeling of like having to stay on until someone else's time overlaps. Things happen at night when someone else's night and your day or whatever it is. It's just a much calmer way of working, and I think a much, much healthier way of working.
When you're thinking about work, do you think it'll look completely different in 10 years? Will these things be everywhere, or will they be sort of unevenly distributed?
Unevenly distributed, basically. I think there'll be some, just like always, I think there'll be some enlightened companies who are willing to give some of these new ideas a shot, and actually some of these old ideas a shot, in a sense. Not all this stuff is new. It's just it's return to common sense. Like, of course you can't get your work done if you're being interrupted nonstop. Like, how could you? You know, that's not a new idea. That's actually an old idea. So I think there'll be a series of enlightened companies and some companies that function better than others who will be more willing to try this stuff. And then there will be other companies that are unwilling to. But I do think over time, more and more of these practices will become more common. So I think you'll have a better shot when new generations of companies come up and old generations of companies wind down. I think there will be a bit more of a change over time.
Thanks to Jason. Now on to Deborah Ripple from Buffer. Deborah's the people success manager at Buffer. She previously worked at WeWork. Deborah's role is to set the team up and keep everyone motivated and on track at Buffer. So Buffer is a software company. She explains what they do. This could be easy, but Buffer don't have an office, so they work completely remotely. While they do have occasional team get-togethers, Deborah explained to me she's hired people she's never met in person. I don't know why I found that so surprising. I guess meeting people and their presence is just so what we regard as making a judgment on them. But she's hired lots of people who she's never met. Buffer is a fascinating organisation. It publishes a lot of its information. You can find everyone's salary on their website, for example. I don't fully get the point of that specific honesty, but their view is that things don't need to be secret and transparent leads to better outcomes. Imagine if your salary was published. So Deborah's the people success manager at Buffer. I chatted to her a couple of weeks ago. Deborah, thank you so much for talking to me. So to kick off, could you explain who Buffer are and what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. Buffer is a social media automation tool that makes it possible to save time and stay flexible and plan your online marketing strategy down to the very minute. And with Buffer, the idea is that you can post into the future so that the next 2 days or the next 2 weeks or the next 2 months even are taken care of, no matter where you happen to be. And it's also a way to understand your social media presence and manage your customer support and do many things like that. I guess what's interesting is that a lot of people know Buffer for the product, but we also sometimes not even known for a product, but more for a culture as a company. We are fully distributed and we care just as much about what we build as how we build it. So my role as a people success manager at Buffer, I focus on making Buffer an exciting place to grow and also doing hiring, which was originally when I joined Buffer 3 years ago. That's what I started.
Tell me this, a couple of things you hinted at along the way there. The first is that Buffer have no office, or no HQ at least, do you? And you sort of, you work in places, but not in a place together. Before we go into the culture of transparency and these other things that you've got, can you explain, is it a weird transition? Because you used to have an office. So how did you go from, we've got this office with a few people working remotely, to actually, there is no office?
Yeah, I guess that's an interesting one. Honestly, it started as a bit of a circumstance thing. In the earliest days of Buffer, Joel and Leo, they were both in the UK, but they didn't quite work together every day when they co-founded Buffer because they were just even a half hour apart and had other commitments. And then when Buffer really kicked off and then they moved to San Francisco for 6 months to try and raise money, when they did, it just turns out they didn't have visas to stay there. So they had money, but they couldn't stay in the US. So they kind of flipped Google Maps and went ahead and went to Hong Kong for 6 months. And I think they went to maybe Israel for 3 months after that, which is super interesting because they were all over the place and started being a remote company, just the two of them, and kind of grew a little bit from that to being six people. Then they moved back to San Francisco and then kind of had to make a bit of a tough decision there because they all wanted to be in San Francisco at that time, but also understood that talent could really come from anywhere and they had to decide whether they were going to hire from everywhere or just San Francisco. And that's when they pondered it a lot, talked to team members and realized that remote was the way to go for them. So decided to completely open. And it was a bit of a sensitive decision as well because they were trying to hire at that time. So kind of had to think on the spot. And just now we have people from about 40 something cities and 16 countries in 11 time zones. So I'd say the transition has been more natural because we did have an office in San Francisco. We had it up until last year and completely closed it just because nobody was going. So it's just a matter of not having a business office.
Some of the basic things that I guess people in that situation might say, they might say, if someone requests a meeting at your offices, how'd you get around that? Or, you know, if they want to meet on your territory, how'd you get around that? Do you ever feel the sense that work feels, I don't know, less tangible? I'm not sure even how to articulate it. The idea that you get into work, that almost work's a place as well as a verb. Do you miss that?
That's a really good question. I'd say it's more difficult for others than it is for us. So at least I'll just speak for myself. I find that I can be in the zone and from the moment that I have headphones on and a computer in front of me, I can really be just about anywhere. If I have good Wi-Fi and a coffee by my side, I can basically work from anywhere and I feel like I'm at work. It's difficult for others to really see that, though. It's very often that you get maybe interrupted while you are on a call just because, you know, it's not obvious that you're actually working or that something's really important. So I don't really find that odd. I'd say something that does help, though, is having routines regardless of where you are. So I think waking up at similar times every morning and things like that, that's to me what really makes it a little bit more tangible, maybe.
So tell me this, I chatted to a professor of organisational behaviour and he described something called geek-sploitation, the idea that firms introduced foosball tables and allowed people to wear their own clothes, ultimately to make people work longer. And it blurred the distinction between real life and work. And to some extent, not having an office seems to do the same. Do you end up working an unhealthy amount or how do you achieve work-life balance when work and life look exactly the same?
Yeah, I guess that can definitely happen if you don't pay attention. I'd say that's definitely a risk of being entirely remote and having no offices and, you know, working from home as well. I'd say if you don't pay attention to that as an individual or as a company, that can be a little bit tricky. As an individual, I think paying attention is maybe just not blurring the line too much on like, the other way around. So when I'm at home and that's kind of like working hour, I try to avoid doing personal things. Like I'm going to sometimes like go out and do an errand of some sort, but I'll still like realize that any time that I take, if I stop now and go and do some laundry, then I know that that's time that I will want to like make up for later in the evening when I might want to go and have a beer with friends. So I think it's a matter of just really kind of isolating a little bit your time and place. And as a company, it is also a matter of showing that that's not your intention at all. So very often we have surveys within the team where we try kind of gauge a little bit for happiness levels through different, various ways. And one of them is we try to ask people, like, how many hours do you think you work a week? And we try to reduce that amount to a maximum. Like, we don't want people not to work, but we want people to work smarter, not harder. So I think because it's one of our values, people understand that that's what Buffer wants.
You described somewhere else the experience that you'd recently spent 6 weeks working in Mexico. I mean, it sounded like a dream. So is this one of the freedoms you've got, that if work's just a laptop and a pair of headphones, you can go and work in all these places and absorb life in different ways? Or was that just a one-off?
No, I guess I tried to do that quite regularly, but I think my intention has shifted. In the last 2 years that I've been at Buffer, I think I've actually been traveling less and less. And whenever I travel longer and longer. So for me, really, the ability to travel would mean that I'm able to go and visit friends more often. So it's not about just taking the backpack and going to Thailand by myself and just hanging out there. I personally don't feel like that's what I need. But going and seeing friends and family more often that I've spread across the world, that's super pleasant and really fulfilling. So I really enjoy that part. But then whenever the opportunity arises to kind of like discover a new city in a slightly different angle, say Mexico, I actually really enjoyed Mexico so much that I'm going back again in October for a month. So it's super nice because you discover a place from a completely different angle that if you're on vacation, I tend to stay longer so that I can enjoy weekends and just kind of go weekends away, maybe around the location that I'm working from. I just feel like it gives you a different view of the place. So it definitely gives a great opportunity for that.
The one other thing I was interested in, your job's evolved now, but you used to be responsible for finding new talent, right? And I guess the opportunity for most people when they're finding talent is, right, you're in this city, you're in London, you're in Manchester, in Paris. You can limit the people to the amount of people in that city. But when the amount of people that you can do that can do the job for you are distributed all over the world, how do you even start? How do you start looking for people who can work in anywhere?
I guess one thing that we're really lucky with Buffer is that we have a lot of inbound applications. Right now, it is just very logical that a lot of applicants still come from where we have customers. Makes sense. That's where our audience is. So that's where people hear about us and eventually look for jobs at Buffer. So that's kind of one aspect of it. But we have a lot of, you know, kind of luck with that, is that we don't have to look for everywhere in the world. We also have a lot of inbound, which makes it really nice. I guess we try to gauge for the ability to work remotely. And that doesn't only come from someone having work remotely. Sometimes it's just fully homecoming. Like when we are able to gauge that someone's very driven and can just kind of like kick things off by themselves in the morning to get work done, that's more of a sign of a good remote person than anything else. So the ability to assess people remotely is something that I get asked a lot about, because people just imagine that you have to have a face-to-face interview with someone to get to know them. But really, for us, we'll be working with them remotely every day. So if we're not able to gauge the way they communicate, or if they're not able to show us their work through video calls and through written communication, then they're not going to be working well with Buffer, right? So
wow, right. I didn't even work that out. So you're hiring people that you've never met face-to-face, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, okay. I don't know why that didn't even occur to me. I presume that you'd go and meet them. Wow. So some of these people might be working in the remote corner of the world, but as long as they're doing their job, do you ever have difficult discussions when it's just not working out for them?
You mean after they join?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we try to coach people. We try to gauge for that. And normally if our hiring process is working well, and if our, you know, we have what we call a boot camp at the beginning of it, someone's journey lasts for 45 days, where we have that very intense period of feedback and back and forth and just deep understanding of how things work. Usually that's when we figure that out. If things aren't working for them remotely, that's usually within those 45 days. If things aren't going well from that perspective after that, that'd be more something we try to coach people on. And maybe coming from other areas, I wouldn't say that we'd figure out that someone doesn't really handle working remotely super well a long time after they join. That would be more of a motivation problem. If their role is not fulfilling for them, then definitely that you could find that the motivation is lacking to get up and work, and that's not at all because they can't work remotely.
One of the things I saw you describing when you were working remotely, so everyone's on different time zones or maybe sort of working in different countries. And you talked in an interview I saw you give about communication becoming asynchronous. And actually one of the phrases you used was, it says it here, communication becomes more intentional. That's interesting. What does that mean?
Yeah, I guess intentional communication and kind of like asynchronous communication is what we found was one of the ways we could solve working remotely effectively. Basically, what we want is for teammates to be happy wherever they are. So that means giving anyone in any time zone the opportunity to make decisions and the opportunity to communicate with others effectively. And so synchronous communication for that doesn't quite work well. So if you have a cluster of people that are all in the New York time zone, for example, you'd have a tendency to have communication on Slack and back and forth. And then, boom, a decision is made. Someone in France or Singapore wakes up and then all of a sudden they don't really have their say in what's going on. So that's one of the things that we were trying to solve, is to really make everyone happy from wherever they are at Buffer. And I think we have a few values that help us with that intentional communication. One of them is taking time to reflect. It means that we're intentional about bringing constructive feedback in discussions and really polishing things when they are presented. So trying to think about many different cases ahead of what we're trying to present. Then another one is choose positivity. It's a funny one because really when you realize that you have different energy levels throughout the day, you also realize you have a lot of empathy when communicating. So say if I'm in Paris and my day is ending, it's 6 or 7 p.m. and things are slowing down and my energy level is really low and I need help from someone at Buffer, then I'd message a teammate. But if they are in San Francisco and they're just waking up and my message is just a little bit off and maybe attacking or not very positive, then honestly, that could just ruin their day. It's not super nice. So thinking ahead of things like that, and maybe just because you're remote, you don't know what's going on in that person's life even more than when you're in an office. So just being careful of things like that and being more intentional about what you write is really key. And I guess the last one would be communicate with clarity. So that's a really important value for us. We try to be as clear as possible, also to be efficient. If I'm going to write something and there's going to be 1,000 back and forth on it because nobody's really understood what I said in the first place, that's not efficient communication. We try to avoid things like, what are your thoughts on this, when it's very, open-ended questions like that, like in, if you're 12-hour, if you have a 12-hour time zone difference with someone and just kind of chatting about that, you have to be more specific about what your question is if you want them to really answer it. So.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I've just read Cal Newport's Deep Work, and actually he talks, I don't know if he uses intentional, but I think it's along the same lines, to be more specific about what you want in an email, to avoid that sort of ping pong of back and forth. One other thing I want to understand is that your culture is remarkably transparent. You publish loads of information about what people earn, what they do. Does that take getting used to it? I understand the remote working is a way to let people live a complete life and be more fulfilled. But what's the reason behind the transparency?
I think it has many, many folds. I'd say how empowering transparency is super important for Buffer and for its founders. And really early on, they realized that they could question many things. And so the idea was, why do we do that way? And why not another way? I think it started originally with salaries being transparent. So we have all of our salaries open on our website. You can just go and check out anyone's pay at Buffer. So internally and externally, it's transparent. And I think it started off with that, where the idea was maybe that could help others create their own salary grid. We've got a salary formula. We think we pay people fairly. Why would we hide it? Kind of thing. So at first, I think it kicked off with that. And then really we realized how empowering that was, power of having information. So then you can spread to your communication every day on Slack. We have all of our channels, most of our channels, I'd say 95% of our channels are open and public, like to ourselves within the team. But we have very few just kind of one-on-one conversations because we just realized that what you think might not be important for someone else could totally be and could be helping them chime in, give their thoughts and things like that. So
through the transparency, and you publish a lot on your blog, I think in the last 12 months you've made, I think Buffer's been sort of pretty open and transparent that you've made job reductions. And there was a statement about one of the founders moving on, elements like that. And I ended up reflecting on whether your working style being like the definition of reasonable. And it seems like the most benign and considerate. And I ended up thinking, right, okay, but I wonder if the reason why sometimes work overachieves and achieves incredible breakout results is because it is unreasonable, and maybe unreasonable work leads to unreasonable level results. I wonder, is your work a lifestyle business where people can live good, happy lives and achieve good results, but not incredible results? Is that right? Is that a wrong reading of the facts?
No, I think it's a perfect reading of it. And that's absolutely the intention of the founders. They really want teammates to stay for as long as they want to stay and not be forced out of, you know, joining Buffer just because, say, they're moving places. Or it's, I think it really helps think ahead of what could work look like if we kind of took some of those boundaries out. And so some boundaries are physical boundaries, but also transparent, like hierarchy boundaries. I think we are trying to help build the future of work. And I think our way of doing it, and it's funny you describe it as reasonable, because that's exactly how I see it. To me, it's just not in a crazy, let's just, do stuff that will get us in the press kind of thing, but more in a considerate, like, why would we even do that in the first place? Can we test that out? Can we see if for a couple of months it works? We also try to publish things, whether they're good or bad, because it's just easy to talk about your successes of like, wow, salary formulas work and being transparent is amazing. But then if you're not able to talk about, wow, like, you know, things aren't working out here and here, and we've had to lay people off, and it's kind of useless.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I guess my interest is maybe that this is a wonderful place to work, but you wouldn't want to invest in it, in the sense that maybe in the way that a company explosively grows when they sort of, they force everyone to work 70 hours a week till those people are done. Your work seems very sustainable. Like if a friend of mine asked me, should I go and work there? I'd say, I've heard so many wonderful things. You should definitely go there. And what I'm trying to work out is you've removed the unreasonable things, and therefore maybe your growth as a company will be slower than other companies. I guess that's what I'm trying to get to the heart of.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is a really good question and definitely at the heart of like many things that we chat about every day. So definitely a super interesting question there. I think that I would agree with you that we're not at all aiming at super fast growth. So if as an investor, someone wants to join the journey and invest in Buffer, if we were to open more rounds or things like that, I'd say fast growth is not in our books, and we wouldn't be a good place for that. We are super lucky that our investors and many people that would potentially, and you know, there's tons of that in the world these days, people that want to invest in more sustainable growth and sustainable businesses and places that will make people happy to work for it. And And also that will make for happy customers in the long run, which is also super important. I think those would be more people that we'd align with, for sure.
Tell me this, can people cope with leaving Buffer? I'd have thought you've got such a considerate, balanced, flexible way of working. If you want to sleep in tomorrow because you're exhausted, then you can make up the time tomorrow night. And Buffer let you do that. I can't imagine anyone wanting to go and work 9 to 5 somewhere else. What's happened to people who've left?
Yeah, I guess I cannot agree more. That's a very tricky thing to do. I think that it's almost something to consider when you've got, you know, a people team and you're planning ahead for the years to come is figure out what, you know, what would happen in the case of someone not feeling like leaving, but really needing to leave or vice versa. It's very tricky, I think, but not necessarily for the reasons that people would imagine. To be fair, like, you know, the things you describe as people being very kind and considerate, I think those are the things that are in the long run, things that would keep you somewhere, not necessarily the perks or the remote life. So I wouldn't say the problem would be going back to a 9 to 5 so much as going to a place where potentially you don't have that level of trust and care for teammates. I think the remote aspect is just one of the many ways you can show that you trust your teammates to do their best work every day and to be very driven individuals. And personally, at least, I could say that I would really struggle with going to a place that doesn't really trust that I'm going to do that by myself and that would need to be behind my back and just kind of watching that I'm doing it. And if that needs to come with, you know, being in an office to make sure that you're doing your work, yeah, understandably, that would potentially not agree with a lot of people at Buffer.
I'm fascinated. I'm very envious, actually. It sounds like the sort of enlightened place. I do wonder if some workplaces will never reach that level of flexibility and enlightenment. I think what I loved about your system is that what we've done with work over the last few years is just add more to it. We've added more meetings, we've added more emails, we've added more demands upon people, but there's been no sort of reciprocation on that. There's been no freedom. If you've got all these emails, do them in your own time. And for me, I think you did something. There's a blog post which shared some of the tools that you use to help you communicate asynchronously. And it's good just to see people demonstrating how they're trying to change the world and trying to change, like, day-to-day work. It felt so interesting. Amazing.
Awesome. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. So if you're interested in remote working, I don't think you'll get any better examples of it than Basecamp and Buffer. Fascinating organisations, really, that I think have pushed themselves and challenged themselves to reinvent work, to ask what would work like if we didn't have these rules. And it's fascinating to see it. I have to say, both of them sound perfectly, wonderfully, delightful places to work. And, you know, it's, while I'm not sure I could handle remote working myself, I just think the idea of how much we need to be in the office and challenging that, it's probably an interesting start point for all of us. Right, as a counterpoint, so I don't want to definitively help you decide your opinions on this. Next week, we've got Ben Wabber from Humanize. Now, Humanize is a company that sprung up from the work of Sandy Pentland at the MIT in Boston. And they've taken the task of trying to understand human dynamics, human physics, as Sandy Pentland calls it, and that they've tried to understand that by the use of these small badges that track the engagement and the interactions between people. Ben has some fantastic and fascinating stats about remote working. I think you're going to find it an interesting scientific backup to this. Thrilled you could listen. You'll find all of the transcripts on the website. That's eatsleepworkrepeat.fm. You can link in to me. People regularly link in and give me their opinions. And you can also follow us on Twitter. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.